Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, we just are going to have a fabulous time this hour. Because it's the holiday season, I just am thrilled to have as a guest Troy Townsend. We are going to be talking food. And some of you may be saying, oh, Donna, please. I'm having so many parties, I don't think I could eat anything. Let me tell you. This is just going to be an absolute joy. I love this Russian proverb that they have in their books. We're going to be talking about cooking with the wines of Washington and also with the wines of Oregon. This is the quote, the Russian proverb. If you have a good wife, good wine, and a rich cabbage soup, look not for other things. Yo, that is a person after my own heart. Troy Townsend is my guest today. Troy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me here, Donna.
Well, it is an absolute delight, and I bet that you and your wife are just absolutely up to your eyeballs in planning for the holidays and deciding on what to fix. And these wonderful, wonderful books, Cooking with the Wines of Oregon and also Cooking with the Wines of Washington, oh, my goodness, what a delight. And I promised my audience that we were going to be sharing some of these recipes in your books. But let's talk about you for a moment. Troy, you were born in Melbourne, Australia, and you have been an actor and a playwright. But you decided you were going to go backpacking around the world, and you entered the arena of hospitality. Tell us how that pushed your buttons.
Well, I certainly did. I've always sort of loved travel, and it's one of the things that pushed my buttons for sure. Food and wine also have always pushed my buttons. But arriving in London from Australia, London, England, that is, I started working. I had some friends already there, and they were working in the hospitality industry. So I started, they got me a job, and one thing led to another, and I started managing bars and doing sort of cellar management for other sort of bars, and just absolutely really develop that passion for good food and good wine. And it's two things that I think will be with me till the day I die.
Well, you took courses in different parts of the world. You decided you were going to have the Bachelor of Arts in International Studies. You were in Malaysia, Turkey, and as you mentioned, the UK. But when you were in Malaysia, it wasn't just food and wine. Apparently, you were able to match up with your wonderful wife.
I certainly did. We're both doing an international exchange program from our different universities, my university from Australia and her university from Canada. And, well, we hit it off. And, we developed a relationship that's been going 6 years strong now.
Well, congratulations. Well, with both of you having a love for the same thing, good food, good wines, international cuisine, just loving life the way you do.
Food, wine, and travel, three of the ultimate passions, and it's nice to be able to combine all three of those things in these two books that we've put together.
Now, you've won some awards for your materials that you've written. You won the Travel Writer of the Year Award with the TNT Magazine of the UK, and then here in moving to the Pacific Northwest in 2004, you co-authored Cooking with BC Wine, and that was a 2005 Gourmand World Cookbook Award winner. And in 2006, you ran a weekly Time for Wine column on CBC Radio. And your lovely wife, she's just so talented, too. And she's now coordinating international programs for Royal Roads University.
That's absolutely right. And, we've been really lucky with those sort of awards and things like that. It's really helped with the books a lot, and it's nice to get some recognition for all that work that you put into those sorts of things, you know?
I think it's fabulous. Why was it that the wines of Oregon and Washington appealed to you? When did you first come? Of course, I have to say I'm very biased. Living in the state of Washington for so many years, I just absolutely think they have some of the most fabulous wineries here. And, of course, Oregon does, too. But from what I read of your material, Oregon is really known for its Pinot Noir. And what about Washington? Give us a little bit of education.
Well, I came to the Pacific Northwest and I settled in British Columbia, Canada. And so we put together that first book, Cooking with BC Wine, by working with different chefs and wineries throughout that province. And after that had all taken place, being so close to Washington, we headed down south of the border and were just absolutely amazed. These fantastic wines that were being produced, absolutely wonderful wine tourism. We extended our trip. We went further down to Oregon, and exactly the same thing. Fantastic world-class winemakers making this just delicious wine. The wineries are set up so well for wine tourism. They really love visitors. You should get out there and visit these wineries because the facilities they have are just fantastic, wonderful restaurants, incredible chefs. And we pretty much just knew we have to continue this Cooking with Wine series and definitely have to make a Washington and an Oregon book because this region that's not as well known for its wine as California, it soon will be because the wines are fantastic. It's a little more temperate climate than somewhere like California, so basically what you're getting is these wonderful wines that come from a similar climate from those in Europe, similar to France and to Germany. But without the restrictions that those places have, because you can grow whatever you like. Often when winemakers in Germany or France are in a region, they're limited in what they can grow by the rules and the laws. You're only allowed to grow this varietal. Yeah, this varietal or this varietal. Those rules don't apply in the Pacific Northwest. So people can actually take these wonderful wines from around the world and put them into this climate and just watch them thrive and turn them into fantastic wine.
Now, we have had the statement made that we need to give credit to the French, et cetera, because of what we have adapted here. But I find it very interesting that the European wine growers have such tight controls on them. Is there a reason for that?
It's history and tradition. And those things are certainly important. But it's very nice, I think, and freeing as a winemaker to be able to pick and choose what you want to grow and what you want to make. I guess it's good for their marketplace. They have different people growing different things in different regions, and it makes those regions a little more special or renowned to them. But as far as I'm very glad that here in the Pacific Northwest that we don't have those restrictions because it really does mean we get such great variety in the sort of wines that are available.
Now, you have 100 recipes in each of the books, you know, cooking with wine with Oregon wines and also Washington wines. What are some of the myths regarding cooking with wine?
Some of the myths, well, there's the old myth that everyone thinks, oh, it's white wine with fish and red wine with meat. It's not a rule that you have to live by. Tuna is absolutely fantastic with a Merlot butter. In fact, it's my favorite way to have tuna is with a Merlot butter. It's got that sort of wonderful, tuna has that wonderful sort of texture and of something similar to beef, so it goes very well. Another myth is that cooking wines, you know the cooking wines you see in the supermarkets, Bono, with sort of infused with salts and vinegars, never use them in your cooking. It can actually ruin a meal.
Really?
Never cook with a wine that you wouldn't drink.
I've heard that one before.
A really good rule to live by. Yeah, and it really makes sense because wine is such a valuable ingredient in the food, and it infuses this wonderful flavor. And if you're using a wine that doesn't have a wonderful flavor to begin with, then you're just going to miss out on all of that. And yeah, as I said, it can actually ruin a meal.
I have also been given the understanding that when you cook with alcohol, you don't need to be worried about the alcoholic content because what you're getting is the flavor. The alcohol itself just disappears. Am I correct?
Well, to a point. As you cook with wine, the alcohol certainly dissipates the longer that you cook. So if you're perhaps doing a roast dish where you're roasting something for a couple of hours, you'll probably lose 95 to 97% of the alcohol. It'll all just burn off. If you're just doing a quick... perhaps a deglazing of a pan, you might not lose quite as much alcohol. It certainly dissipates, but it won't be gone completely.
Now, we've got the holidays coming up. And mm-hmm. I'm sure with you, just like with my husband and myself, you've been invited to buku activities. Some places will be serving hors d'oeuvres only. Other times you're going to have a full sit-down dinner. And when people are preparing for things like this, it's so nice to look for something different. It's so nice to have the opportunity to explore new tastes. And in your book, Cooking with the Wines of Oregon,
mm-hmm.
you have a baked crab and almond dip that I just think is awesome. And so I
yeah.
wanted to share it with my audience. And even those of you that may not like crab, well, according to Troy and his wife, this has a wonderful, wonderful texture to it. It's not going to taste crabby, and it's got what they describe as a cheesy nuttiness that works really well with white wine. So, okay, get your pad of paper and pen. These are the ingredients. 1/4 cup of sliced almonds, 8 ounces of cream cheese softened, 8 ounces of cream cheese softened, 1/4 cup of mayonnaise, 1/4 cup of white wine, 1/4 cup grated Parmesan cheese, 1/4 cup of finely chopped green onions, really finely chopped those, 1 clove of garlic crushed, and you need 2 dashes of hot red pepper sauce, and then 1 can of crab meat, which is 6 ounces. You want to make sure you drain it well. And what you do, you preheat your oven to 350 degrees. You want to toast your almonds in a dry pan over medium heat. That happens so quick. You just put them in the pan and just stir it frequently, and then they turn this wonderful golden brown. And then once that's all done, you set it aside. It'll just take you a couple of minutes. You combine all of the ingredients that I've mentioned except the almonds and the crab in a medium-sized bowl, and you really stir it and mix it well. When it's well combined, then you fold in the crab. You transfer the mixture to a small baking dish, sprinkle it with the toasted almonds, and bake it uncovered for 20 to 25 minutes until it's hot and bubbly. You remove it from the oven, stir it thoroughly, let it cool for 5 minutes, and stir it once more before you serve it. And you can serve it with tortilla chips or crusty French bread, anything that's, you know, just going to be really nice to have that just as a light spread. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about that recipe. I know, I mean, I was salivating when I was talking about it. But, Troy, I wanted to ask you, the type of white wine that you would use, is sweeter better? Because I know some people, I'm one of them, I enjoy a good Riesling. I enjoy wines that have a lighter, a little bit on the sweet side. Or would a Chardonnay be better?
Riesling. Yeah, that would be fantastic. Well, the nice thing about it is choose a wine that suits your taste, because really you're the one who's going to be enjoying it. Both of those, a dry-style wine or a sweet-style wine, would both work really well with different elements of that dish. The dry would go very well with the crab element, and the slightly sweeter would go so well with the cheeses, the cream cheese and the grated Parmesan. So both of those wines would be delicious, and it's just up to you to choose something that you think is more suited to your taste. For me personally, I love this dip with a Pinot Gris wine, and yes,
oh.
Something that's a little off dry as well.
Uh-huh. All right. Now, I wanted to ask another question. There are those people out there that want low fat, so on and so forth. If they decided mm-hmm. to use a low fat mayonnaise and a mm-hmm. non-fat cream cheese, would that affect it?
It depends on the quality of the mayonnaise and the cream cheese that they're using. Certainly, if you know of a good low-fat cream cheese and mayonnaise, perhaps Hellmann's mayonnaise is always a good one. They do a great low-fat version. Then
okay.
you would still have an absolutely delicious dip doing it that way. Because, like you say, Donna, this time of year, we get offered so much food, it really does pay to be a little health conscious. And if I'm like you, I'm always looking for ways to keep that flavor, but without sacrificing too much.
Well, yes, and for some people, sacrificing might be having to go out and do that 5-mile run after they have 2 bites.
Exactly. Exactly. So we can pick and choose our sacrifices on it.
I think there may come a time when you have a party, you have a line of bicycles outside your house. You say, okay, this is what we do. I used to know a guy that would do that after he had a holiday dinner. He'd go out biking for 5 miles, and he said then he'd feel like he wasn't looking or feeling like Santa Claus by the time he finished with all the good stuff. But it was funny to me.
That's a great idea. You could actually do biking between courses, perhaps. Start with your appetizers at one house, everyone gets on their bikes, works it off to the next, and has their main meal.
What a great way to get rid of guests. If they knew that was going to happen, they wouldn't stay.
Yeah, that's
they
true.
Wouldn't. Oh, well, now, there is a quote you have in your book. God in his goodness sends the grapes to cheer both great and small. Little fools will drink too much, and great fools not at all. You have so many, you know, there's just these wonderful little quotes that you have folded in through your delicious recipes. Now, one of these that I thought, wow, this would be a terrific salad, because dependent on what people like to serve, of course, turkey is really popular, but I know my husband absolutely loves prime rib, and you have people that love to have the crown, you know, crown of pork or the pork loins and all of this, and we'll be talking about a few recipes that we have here. But you've got a Taste of Oregon salad that I thought really, dependent on what you would serve, it's so nice, and I loved the textures, and I wanted to share that. And this is with Marionberry wine. And
yeah,
I was
Marion.
So surprised to see this.
Well, it's actually quite popular in Oregon. There's quite a lot of fruit wineries that are opening now. And our Marionberries are very Oregon. They're like, for those that don't know, it's like a giant blackberry. Absolutely delicious.
Yes, and you said here, between July and August, around 30 million pounds of Marionberries are picked. And you know, people love to cook with it, but it's made also into wine, and you can use other fruit wines if you want to make this salad. You just adjust the sugar levels to suit whatever wine you decide to choose, and you can add meat to this, like grilled chicken, and you've got a meal.
Exactly.
Just
a little bit of
basic salad. But this is so nice and light that I would think it would just about go with anything. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. You are correct. It's a very versatile salad.
All right, here we've got 3/4 of a cup of Marionberry wine. 3/4 of a cup of Marionberry wine. You need 1 small shallot diced, 1 tablespoon of sugar, 1/4 cup of apple cider vinegar, 1 tablespoon of Dijon mustard, 1 tablespoon of Dijon mustard, 1/4 cup of canola oil, and then 1/2 cup of hazelnuts, and you want to coarsely chop them, and then 12 cups of mixed organic greens. That's 12 cups of mixed organic greens, and then 1/2 cup of crumbled feta cheese, which is one of my favorite cheeses. Now, the wine, the shallot, and the sugar, you mix in a small saucepan over medium heat, bring it to a boil, and let it simmer for 15 minutes. Then you take the mixture, put it in a food processor or blender, and then you add your vinegar and mustard. And while that's blending, you slowly add the oil, and then with the hazelnuts in a dry pan over medium heat, you stir them frequently until they're lightly toasted, making sure, again, not to burn them, just like what we talked about in the previous recipe with the almonds. And then you divide the greens evenly between the plates, top with the desired amount of dressing, hazelnuts, and crumbled feta cheese. I mean, this is so deliciously light. It would be a salad you could serve year-round.
Absolutely, and it is delicious. And it is important to remember, if you can't get that Marionberry wine, you can substitute that for another fruit wine, and the fruit with the feta and the greens just goes so well. Really
now, with
delicious.
The hazelnuts, you can substitute walnuts if you want.
Absolutely.
Or pecans.
Almonds would also be good, yeah?
Yep, anything like that. And then the shallot, if someone doesn't have a shallot, a white...
An onion.
Just a small onion. You don't need a large amount. So what would it be,
no.
A small shallot? Would that be like about a tablespoon?
Yeah, I had a heaped tablespoon of finely chopped, either a sweet onion, so a white onion, or even perhaps a Spanish onion would look nice in that one, too.
Oh, okay. There we go. So there we have some options, depending, because we have listeners around the world. And so sometimes things may not be available to them, depending, for example, on what part of the country they live in the United States. Sometimes you're able to get certain things, and sometimes you're not. So it's good to know about substitutes.
It's good, and it's always great to use local ingredients wherever you are. It enhances the cooking. There's a great saying, what grows together goes together. So to substitute those for local ingredients is a great idea.
Oh, I think so. Let me ask you a question. Do you have a traditional holiday dinner, or do you and your wife always come up with something different?
We're always doing something different. And that's part of the fun. We love to cook, and we love to experiment. So this year we're going to do a couple of different things. We always sort of have the traditional element with something a little different. So we'll do a honey roasted turkey, which would be very nice. And we'll do a whole salmon dish as well.
Okay, all right. You've got me salivating. What's this honey roasted turkey? Turkey is one of my favorites. What is it you're going to do with this?
Well, it's basically, it's from one of our books, it's a cooking with wine recipe. I don't have it right here with me, but it's glazed in a beautiful honey and white wine sauce. It's wonderful. We tried it out for the book. We try all the recipes in our books before we put them in, which involves a lot of cooking, Donna. It's with over 100 in each book, and plus the ones that don't make it, it means we're really busy when we're putting these together. But yeah, that was a recipe that I remember trying, and we liked it, and we thought that is going to be good for Christmas, for the family Christmas. So we'll be opening up our book and doing the honey roasted turkey.
Now, is it one of the recipes here in the book from Oregon? Because I don't remember seeing that. Or is that in the one from Washington or another one of your books?
Just let me have a look. I'll open up a little book here.
I'm not going to let him get off the hook, folks. We can't be talking about this honey roasted golden turkey here without figuring out what's going
on.
Okay,
here we go.
Turkey lovers
wine
out
and
there.
Honey. Yeah, this is in the Oregon book.
Okay.
76. Let me have a look through it. It is a delicious recipe. Yeah, it's a wine and honey roasted turkey with gravy. And it's,
wow, I found it. Yes, here it is. Yum.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't cook worth a hoot, you can still do this. And
yeah, it's good
wonderful.
For it. It's great for somebody who hasn't perhaps done a turkey before, because everything's fairly simple and straightforward.
Okay, I found the recipe too. And these are the ingredients. Now, by the way, you want to preheat your oven to 350. I told you we were talking food today. I wasn't kidding.
Sure.
I'm not kidding. We're talking food. This is so much fun. I just love to do this. So here we've got the oven at 350 degrees. Now, that's preheating. Now, here are the ingredients. You're going to need a cup of white wine, 3/4 of a cup of butter, 3/4 of a cup of butter, 2 shallots finely chopped, and then you're going to need 1/4 teaspoon of dried basil, 1 bay leaf, 4 cups of chicken broth, 1/4 cup of honey. You're going to need 1 turkey, 12 pounds. You're going to need 2 carrots halved lengthways, 6 cloves of garlic, 1 onion unpeeled and quartered, 4 tablespoons of all-purpose flour, and, of course, some salt and pepper you'll use to taste. And this is really, really nice, really, really easy. You've got that oven that's preheated to 350. In a saucepan over high heat, you combine the wine, 1/2 cup of the butter, the shallots, basil, bay leaf, and 3 cups of the chicken broth. Bring it to a boil and then reduce to a simmer for 15 minutes. Remove from the heat and stir in that 1/4 cup of honey. And then you season your turkey well with salt and pepper, and you carefully rub the remaining 1/4 cup of butter between the skin and the meat and over the breast, thighs, and drumsticks. And tie or skewer the legs together and place in a roasting pan on a wire rack. Drop the carrots, garlic, and onion into the bottom of the pan. Put it in the bottom of the pan. You baste the turkey all over with the wine mixture. Place in the oven about every 25 to 30 minutes. You baste your turkey with the juices from the bottom of the pan. You're going to cook it for about 3 hours until a meat thermometer inserted into the thickest part of the thigh reads 180 degrees Fahrenheit. You remove the bird from the oven, cover it loosely with aluminum foil, and let it rest while you make the gravy. And you need to let your bird rest for 30 minutes before you carve it. And the liquid that's in your roasting pan, you put it into a bowl or a large glass measuring jug and set it aside. You throw away the onion, the garlic, the cloves, carrots and bay leaf. You add the remaining cup of chicken broth to the roasting pan and use a wooden spoon to scrape up all of the browned bits from the bottom of the pan. You add this mixture to the drippings and allow the drippings to sit for a few minutes until the fat rises to the top. You remove the fat and reserve 4 tablespoons of it. Now you reserve that fat. You place the reserved fat in a saucepan over medium heat. Whisk the flour into the hot fat. It's important to have equal portions of fat and flour. Stir until the flour takes on a golden color, then slowly start adding the reserved pan drippings while continually whisking. You should add a total of 3 to 4 cups. Stir until the gravy is simmering and thick, and the gravy will continue to thicken when it's removed from the heat. Yum. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you about something. You talked about putting the butter between the skin and the meat of the turkey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell us the best way to do that. I've done that for years, and oh, does that make for good flavor?
It sure does. It'll make that nice crispy skin happen as well. So it really makes it good turkey. And just pull that skin up, and you just it'll just come right off the bird. Get lots of butter, and just slide your hand in under there, and just rub that butter right into the meat. And that's going to make it so juicy and delicious and brown that it's going to be a turkey that you're going to want to cook again and again and again.
Yes. Now, people will say, well, I've got turkeys. They have the pop-up unit on it. Is it something that I should still do if I have those turkeys that have the little pop-up thing? Do you just remove that and then put it back in the same place?
Yeah, exactly. That's the way I would do it.
Because it does make a difference when you put the butter underneath the skin.
It certainly does.
It makes the meat moist. And white meat often has a tendency to dry out badly.
Mm-hmm. It does, and that's what you want to avoid, and that's why you want to keep making sure you baste it. So, every 25 to 30 minutes, get all that juice from the bottom of the pan and just recover the bird so that it doesn't dry out, because we want a nice, juicy, yummy turkey.
Oh, and it's so good. When the meat's moist like that, it's just absolutely spectacular. So even if you're a novice with turkey, this is something, or if you fix turkey and you go, oh, ho-hum, you can work with this. And with the white wine, again, whatever tastes good to you in this recipe mixture.
Because what you're going to be doing is going to be really concentrating those flavors, because the wine, as it evaporates, all those flavors from the wine intensify, and so you're just left with that wonderful, all the good things from the wine are what you're left with, as long as you've got a good wine to start with.
Now,
it doesn't have to be the most expensive wine, just the good quality wine.
Yes, and remember, taste it. If it doesn't taste good to you, trust me, it's not going to taste good in your turkey or in
That's
any
right.
of the recipes that we're discussing. That is something that is so important to remember. If you do not like what you're tasting, just forget it.
It's not going to get any better in the food, Donna. Those flavors will intensify. So the good flavors will intensify, but if the flavors there are bad, then they're going to intensify as well. So that's what you've got to remember.
Okay. Now, Troy has consented to stay with us for another 15 minutes. Troy and his wonderful wife, Cheryl Lynn Townsend, by golly, we're going to come back and share some more wonderful recipes that you possibly might want to do for the holidays. And we've even got some good, wonderful, wonderful desserts. Yes, we can't forget the sugar. You do not want to be deprived of your sugar this holiday season. Cooking with the Wines of Washington and also of Oregon. We'll be coming back in just a moment. Don't you go away now.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I was joking with Troy while we were off the air. I said, I'm gaining 45 pounds just by talking about these scrumptious recipes. Oh, they're so good. And we are going to be sharing a dessert. But let's talk beef. We have a lot of people, like my husband, who love beef. And there's nothing like a delicious filet mignon. And you have, in the Cooking with the Wines of Oregon, this fabulous recipe, the Pines 1852 filet mignon with Merlot and mushrooms. Tell us about the Pines and how you found out about this recipe.
About 60% of the recipes in the book, we actually wanted to get them from either winery chefs or from winemakers themselves. So what we actually did is we approached these wineries and said, look, we're putting this book together. We recognize that you guys make great wine. Do you have a recipe you'd like to submit to the book that uses your wine as an ingredient? So about 60% of those recipes in the book are directly from these different wineries. And the Pines 1852 is one of those wineries. That one's actually located in the Delph. And it's a wonderful winery, and it's great. If you want to go and visit, you just give them a call, and they'll set up a whole tour for you and take you around. So, as most of the wineries in the books will.
Yes, and I think it's been my observation and delightful pleasure that when you have a chance to spend time with people at the wineries, they are just delighted to share with you.
And nobody loves talking. Yeah, no one loves talking wine more than people that work at the winery. So it's a great place to learn. If you're interested in wine, then yeah, that's really the place that I would recommend heading out to the wineries and just have a chat with those people, because they're so passionate about wine that it will really rub off on you. And it's a lot. You gain a lot more from drinking the wine if you understand exactly where it comes from. You've seen it. You've seen the land. You understand the climate. It really makes a difference.
Now, Merlot. Merlot has been around as a wine for centuries. How far back have they traced it?
Back to the first century of France, actually. It's a very old varietal, very popular in Bordeaux. That's where most people are familiar with Merlot, from the wines of Bordeaux, and it's been there since the 1800s. In America, it's been popular probably since the late 70s, and it's as a wine in its own right. Before that, it was used as a blending wine. And then people started making Merlot on its own and thinking, wow, this is absolutely delicious. And now you can't really imagine a wine list without Merlot on it.
And this is a wine that goes very well with, my goodness, so many things. Lamb, meat, wild game.
Nice pastas, even a great cheese wine, Merlot. If you're doing a cheese
and chocolate. You said it goes well with chocolate, and I know that's true for a fact.
It does very well, especially with that dark chocolate. Oh, it just makes me
happy
to think about it.
Yeah, milk chocolate, yeah. Dark chocolate, very good.
Absolutely.
Absolutely yummy. But we're not talking chocolate right now. We're talking filet mignon. So for those of you who are beef lovers, let's talk about the recipe here. Obviously, you had it, and this is going to serve about six people, but it's six filet mignon steaks, about an inch thick, and salt and pepper, and obviously you use that to your seasoning taste buds, whatever they may be. You need 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 3 tablespoons of unsalted butter. That I found interesting. 3 tablespoons of unsalted butter, 2 cloves of garlic, and you want to mince that finely, 1 shallot diced, or, you know, a small onion diced real finely, 1 portobello mushroom sliced, and 4 ounces of cremini mushroom sliced, and then 1/2 cup of low-sodium beef broth and 1/2 cup of Merlot. And I'm parentheses after this. You say, if you need more wine, add more.
Exactly.
That is just amazing. Okay, so what do we do now with these filet mignons?
Okay, so you season your steaks on both sides with salt and pepper. Heat up 2 teaspoons of the oil and 1 tablespoon of the butter over a medium-high heat in a heavy frying pan that's large enough to fit all the steaks. That's a big frying pan. Add the steaks and sear both sides until they're lightly browned, about 2 minutes per side. Then remove those steaks, put them on a platter, and just cover them up with some foil. Then what you're going to do is preheat the boiler to about 500 degrees. Place the brown steaks on a lightly oiled broiler pan or in an oven-proof frying pan, and broil the steaks on the top rack until they're done the way that you like them. Turn them about halfway through. If you like your steaks rare, it'll be about 5 minutes, 7 minutes for medium rare, and 9 minutes if you like them medium. While those steaks are cooking, heat up your remaining 2 tablespoons of butter and 1 teaspoon of oil in the same frying pan that you used for the steaks. Add in the garlic and the shallots and just sweat those for 2 to 3 minutes. Then add your mushrooms and cook them until they're almost done, which will be about 2 minutes. If the pan starts to get dry, because mushrooms do eat up that butter, add a little more butter. Then drop in the beef broth and the Merlot and cook the mixture until it's reduced and slightly thickened, which will be in about 2 minutes. Put your steaks onto a nice warm plate, spoon the mushroom mixture over the top, and enjoy that with a nice glass of Merlot.
Oh, boy. And you could have that Oregon salad that we were talking about earlier.
Oh, wouldn't that go well?
Oh, my goodness. And then if you wanted to have some wonderfully freshly baked bread, I mean, talk about simple. This is total luxury. This is wonderful. And
that
have this. I mean, gee whiz, you don't get any better than that.
Well, it's good to use simple ingredients, and you keep things good. Quality ingredients can make all the difference. You don't need to have all these sort of crazy things in there. If you've got those good, simple ingredients to start with, then you really can't go wrong.
Now, what if you're not able to get a portobello mushroom or a cremini mushroom?
The mushrooms you can get a hold of. Use your locally grown mushrooms. If you've got someone, you know, that is experienced enough to go and collect some wild mushrooms, then that certainly would be a great addition. Otherwise, even just your regular mushrooms, store-bought mushrooms would be great. Get them fresh from the grocer's section. Don't use the ones in a can, and you'll be fine.
Well, if you're not salivating by now, I don't know what it's going to take to get you. If you are people that enjoy good food, because this is great. Well, now that we're totally stuffed with filet mignon, we have the Oregon salad, we have all kinds of turkey. We've had all this wonderful food. Of course, we must have a totally, totally decadent dessert. Nothing simple here. This is something that is really going to tickle the taste buds, and it's something that when you have it, I would say if you've had a nice meal, relax, serve some coffee, let people just sort of mellow out a little bit, and then just absolutely blow them away with this wonderful Napiqua's chocolate shortbread and French vanilla ice cream with cherry sauce. And my husband absolutely loves cherries. And this is something that I thought, oh, boy, this is a winner. And you can't go wrong. I mean, you'll make everybody happy. For chocolate lovers, you'll make them happy. Vanilla ice cream lovers, you'll make them happy. And gee whiz, you're going to get all of the wonderful food groups. And boy, are you going to enjoy this. None of this has any calories in it. Tell me.
Can't guarantee that.
Oh, come on, Troy. Come on. It's a holiday season.
I'll work with you then. Yeah.
You'll work with me. Oh, great. Well, you do your magic over the pan, and those calories will just disappear, and also we'll get another bite.
That sounds good.
Yes. Let's talk about Napiqua glissade. So So what is this? Tell me about this wine. I've never heard of it before. This is brand new to me.
Okay, so their Glissade is one of their dessert wines, and they make it with a Gewürztraminer grape. It's a very sweet wine, so if you substitute, if you can't get there in the Piqua Glissade, and that's what we do in the book, we let these wineries use their own wine as an ingredient in the recipe so mm-hmm. that we can get those recipes from their chefs. Of course, if you can't get that wine, you substitute for whichever sweet dessert wine you like. Yeah, this one's, you could use an ice wine, you could use an ice wine style, you could just use a late harvest wine, but this one, yeah, was made with Gewürztraminer.
Well, quickly, I want to give out this recipe because it is really an easy one. You need
okay.
2 cups of canned dark sweet cherries, and it's about a 16-ounce can. Otherwise, you might be able to find one at 16 ounces. You're going to need 1/8 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/8 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/4 cup of dessert wine, whatever your preference is, just like you mentioned. You're going to need 2 teaspoons of cornstarch, 2 teaspoons of cornstarch, 1 cup of unsalted butter, 1 cup of unsalted butter, 1/2 cup of sugar, 1/2 cup of sugar, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1 teaspoon of vanilla, 1/2 cup of unsweetened cocoa powder. Use the finest you can get. 1/2 cup of unsweetened cocoa powder, 1 3/4 cups of all-purpose flour, 1 3/4 cups of all-purpose flour, 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt, 2 quarts of French vanilla ice cream. You can make your own or you can just buy it at the store. And then your semi-sweet chocolate shavings for garnish. I mean, if you don't like chocolate, you don't have to put them on, but trust me, you love chocolate. So this is how the recipe goes. You take the juice from the cherries. You combine the juice from the cherries, the cinnamon, the wine, and the cornstarch. You put it all in a small saucepan. You cook it on medium-low heat, stirring it constantly until the sauce turns dark and thickens a little bit. Then you remove it from the heat and add the cherries. Now, you want to let the sauce cool to room temperature. So you want to cover it and set it aside or refrigerate it. If you're doing this in advance, refrigerate it, and then before you would use it to serve, then you would want to warm it ever so slightly. Now, in the meantime, you're going to preheat the oven to 325 degrees, and you use an electric mixer with a paddle attachment to cream the butter and the sugar together until it's light and fluffy. Then you stir in the vanilla. Then you sift the cocoa, flour, and salt together and add to the butter mixture. You mix it just until everything is well combined, and you remove the dough to a lightly floured surface. And you flour the top of the dough lightly and use a floured rolling pin to roll the dough out to just less than 1/4 inch thick. You don't want the dough too thin. You cut the dough with a 4-inch round cookie cutter or any other shape you like, and you place the cookies about 1 inch apart on a parchment-lined baking sheet. And the dough scraps that you have left over, roll them out again to make more cookies. You bake these cookies for 15 minutes or until they're firm to the touch and turn the pans around once or twice during the cooking process so that they will cook evenly. Allow them to cool before removing them from the parchment. And to serve, this is what you do. You take a cookie, put it on a dessert plate, top it with a scoop of ice cream, pour the sauce over top, and top it with shavings of semi-sweet chocolate. Yum.
Delicious. Oh. That really is a wonderful recipe, and it is easy to make as well. And, yeah, I really recommend people at home, if you're looking for something a little different, that's absolutely delicious, and I'll have your guests begging for the recipe, and that's a good one to go with.
Cooking with the Wines of Oregon, Cooking with the Wines of Washington, Troy Townsend has been my guest. Troy, quickly, what is your website?
It's www.polyglotpublishing.com, and that's a tricky one. It's P-O-L-Y-G-L-O-T, publishing.com, and that means many tongues in Latin.
Polyglotpublishing.com. Well, they have got tastes for food that are out of this world, so I want to thank you so much, Troy, for being my guest today. It
thank
has been
so
an absolute delight.
Wonderful.
This
Thanks
is
so
Donna Sebo, and we're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't you go anywhere now. We got more good things to share with you.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. What fun. I just thoroughly enjoy talking with people and sharing with you these wonderful, wonderful recipes that, you know, food is a necessary component of life. Well, so is good conversation, and if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, give me a call. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. Well, I know that it's the day before Christmas next week on Monday, and then Christmas is going to be on Tuesday. I wanted to let you know we are going to be running the Best of Donna on Monday and Tuesday. Tuesday, just like you, I'm going to be with family and friends, and so we're going to have a delightful time. And then we're going to have a repeat of one of my broadcasts on Monday, because it takes a lot of work when you have a big household of people like I do to get ready for. So just know that we're going to be having that, but I'll be back live with you on the 26th, and we're going to be having an open mic program. So on Wednesday, it's just going to be lots of sharing, and you'll be able to call in at any time during the hour. And then we're going to be talking about the passion and the paycheck. Serena Williams is going to be my guest. And then Teresa Tapp next Friday. Well, after the holidays, after all, you want to get fit and be fabulous, right? Well, Teresa Tapp is going to tell us about T-Tap. And I have to share with you, I've been practicing with this stuff. I found I had muscles I didn't even know existed. Oh, boy, is it a workout. In 15 minutes, you can drop two dress sizes or two belt sizes, guys. So after the holidays, this is absolutely fabulous. Teresa Tapp is going to be my guest next Friday. And then on the 31st, the last day of 2007, we're going to be talking with Alan Smith. And the title of his publication is Unbreak Your Health. And this is a fabulous publication. And then, by golly, we're going to be into the new year. Can you believe it? It's an amazing thing. Coming into a brand new year, new opportunities. It's exciting. So just know that we've got a wonderful lineup of guests next week, and we'll be here accepting on Monday and Tuesday. We'll be having pre-recorded Christmas broadcasts for you. I wanted to share with you, and again, if you want to give me a buzz, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. Remember, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then let me do what I do, and after that, you're welcome to ask a question. I came across this story about a man who's called the Christmas Warrior, and I thought I would share it with you because it's about a pretty nice guy. His name is Kenneth Merryboy, and he had bought himself a used Santa suit is tall and lanky, and he didn't look anything like Santa Claus. I mean, Santa Claus isn't skinny. No. The Santa Claus we know and love is a ho-ho-ho, jolly, jolly, chubby character. Well, it didn't make any difference, and he didn't care. He was fulfilling a vow that he had made the previous Christmas. Now, this situation took place just before Christmas of 1978, and Kenneth was a passenger in a car that was traveling down a very, very empty road in the Navajo Nation in Utah. It was so dark out, and the driver of the vehicle was an elderly woman, and she struck and accidentally killed an 8-year-old boy. Well, when Kenneth met the boy's family, he made a promise that he was going to do whatever it takes to make children happy at Christmas time. This is quite a guy, because he wasn't yet 18 years of age when he made this vow. He was living at the time with his mother and younger brother on the reservation, and they were barely able to make ends meet. Why? Well, he was working as a welder, and he wasn't making very much money. But he had managed to scrape together enough cash where he was able to go out and buy a Santa suit. And he went around persuading people who were just as dirt poor as he was to give candy and fruit for families that were probably even more needy than they were. Now, this is what he did. I think he was quite creative. He strapped the cardboard reindeer to the front of his old red pickup. And just before midnight on Christmas Eve, and it was blowing like crazy. It was just a horribly windy night. He started knocking on the doors of dilapidated houses and trailers along the Utah Strip. And this is the area that is the poorest section of the Navajo Nation. He said it's so poor that many of the homes, which were dark, they didn't have any electricity. They didn't even have plumbing. It's hard to believe, isn't it? But that was the case. And some families were afraid to open the doors so late at night. Well, there was a little boy at one house that called out to his parents and said, "It's a man! He's got a big bag!" The little boy was holding up a lantern and watching Kenneth from behind the curtains, telling his parents that he was outside. Well, Kenneth played Santa Claus. Skinny Kenneth was playing Santa Claus with as hearty a ho-ho-ho as he could possibly get out. Every door that opened to him, he handed out candy canes, oranges, mints, and these children had never seen Santa Claus before. So they didn't care that his costume was threadbare. And his store-bought beard, who cares? They were just thrilled to have someone come into their life. They weren't disappointed. They weren't critical. They just were thrilled. Kenneth was touched so deeply and his teenage soul, that he said, "I'll do this again next year." Well, he kept it up year after year. There were elves that started joining him in his Christmas expeditions. And today, Kenneth is now 46 years old, and he's a commissioner for San Juan County. And his solo Christmas Eve visits have grown into a phenomenal annual Navajo feast with gifts of clothing, tools, and toys for over 700 people. There are some kids that can't come because they're sick or they don't have transportation. But Kenneth and his group of elves don't forget about any of them. Kenneth said his grandfather taught him that you learn to be a man and become a warrior by sharing and by keeping promises. I love that story. I thought you would too. This is Donna Sebo. I know that you have a fabulous holiday season and you've got so much shopping to do. My goodness, Christmas is just around the corner. And wherever you are, whatever you're doing, keep the spirit of Christmas inside of you. Remember Kenneth. Remember the Secret Santa I told you about the other day. It is true, Santa's a symbol. It's a symbol of joy, abundance, freedom, and the gift of sharing. There is so much there to appreciate. Remember that as you go around. Remember you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And you don't have to necessarily wear a Santa suit or a beard or go ho, ho, ho. But you can spread a smile. You can remember to be thoughtful. And if there's a food bank somewhere nearby or Toys for Tots or something else that you would like to participate in, maybe you'd like to serve Christmas dinner to those less fortunate. Whatever it is that you want to do, whatever it is you do, do it with joy and love in your heart. And know that it's going to touch and ripple out to so many that you might never, ever even get to know or see. You make a difference. And I'm so glad you shared this time with me and with Troy. We had a good time with food and fun and laughter. And I want you to have the same with this holiday season. God bless. I'll be back with you live on Wednesday. Remember, the Best of Donna will be playing on Monday and then a Christmas special on Tuesday. God bless. Talk to you next week. Bye for
now.
You
have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.